Galbraith devotes an entire chapter to explaining why existing measures of inequality don't really measure inequality. Compare apples, expenditure, gross or net, in one country, based on surveys, with oranges, household income, gross or net, in another. And to collect and analyze all this data requires gargantuan effort and resources. It's expensive to do all this surveying, which means you can't look long or say anything much about how things play out over time. And the results it produces are often laughable. In one, the researchers concluded that Sweden had higher inequality than Spain. In another, that countries can gain or shed 5 to 15 Gini points, depending on the particular country example. And the Gini coefficient is apparently a gross measure of income inequality for an entire population. And there were other studies that seemed designed to prove that you can't say anything at all, in a global sense. Despite a global integration of economies, you can't say anything at all about inequality. The bumblingness of all these research attempts was one of the most interesting bits Galbraith documents. So how do we know that power is sculpting a reality? He acknowledges that, quote, measures of economic inequality never become part of the official statistical routine in the national income accounts or labor statistics, unquote, from page 20. Despite this, he refuses to acknowledge the existence of power, despite his own evidence. And so he is frequently boggled. There's this long quote I may or may not read all of it. If you go to the Nascent's website, you'll find excerpts from the first and second chapter and the final chapter of this book, Galbraith's book. So you can read it in more relaxed way than I'm going to try to read this bit. But this quote says, quote, this work is based on a simple insight. And let me just interject. Please keep in mind as you read this that what he's saying is that collecting this data is pretty easy. And so it strengthens the point that it's completely unbelievable, has no credibility, the notion that this data or that these conclusions were unavailable to power and to the pundits who serve them, and that we could not have been discussing this long before now, this trend. So let me go back to this quote. This work is based on a simple insight. The distribution of economic earnings is built up in any given national economy out of deeply interlaced institutional entities, firms, occupations, industries, and geographic regions. That being so, consistent observation of the movement of these entities taken at their average values and compared to each other is often sufficient to reveal the main movements of the distribution as a whole. This is true even if the coverage of the economy isn't comprehensive or wholly representative, so long as the grouping structures are kept consistent from one observation to the next. Further, the movement over time of inequality is often determined by forces that work from the top down. These forces broadly differentiate the income paths of people working in different industries or parts of the country. Therefore, data sets that capture the average incomes of major groups of people, such as by industry or sector or region, may contain a sufficiently large share of information on the evolution of economic inequality to serve as good approximations for the movement of the distribution as a whole. These semi-aggregated categorical data sets, in other words, are an important data resource with strong potential for improving our knowledge of the level and change in economic inequality and for comparing one entity to the next. But, and this is, I'm emphasizing this point, but he says, possibly because economists tend to be trained to the virtues of the survey and the primacy of the individual, they have been largely overlooked, these data sets. And except by UTIP, which is him, the name of his project in Texas, University of Texas at Austin, they have not been used much in work of this kind. Data sets of this type are, from a computational point of view, extremely simple. And he says that This was a surprising finding, and it retains, even for us, a touch of mystery after many years of working with the data. But it checks out repeatedly, and perhaps most dramatically in the simple fact that neighboring countries with closely linked economies tend to report similar inequality measures, while the differences between countries grow as the geographic and economic ties between them weaken, unquote. So this is called sculpting a reality. This is called sculpting a reality using the means of credit, i.e. money. You determine where money goes. You determine what happens. This is so obvious. The notion that the punditry out there hadn't figured this out long before now, those that serve power, is laughable. So back to his notion of they were apparently so trained in the notion that we are individuals and not collectivities, they couldn't see the obvious. Even data collection must bow to the gods of atomization. And so their breakthrough, the folks at UTIP, came from seeing that we are seen through our collective power and not as individualities. That it is our collective power that generates the energy up that registers our existence, from which how we're doing can be assessed. Now, given power's obsession with assessment, evidence, data, quantification, evaluation, chopping things into measurable quantities, tracking, and then, of course, always, always prognosticating. I hear Twitter just paid $100 million to buy a company that would simply generate data for it on us, data on us. So trust, it's highly unlikely that this extremely easy yet high-quality technique for tracking our potential restlessness hasn't occurred to them, to power. But they'd never want to worry us with such information. No, don't worry your pretty little heads.